from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Dark John 99.
Say my name, no one is around you. Say, baby, I love you. You ain't running games. Say my name.
You know what that means.
You acting kind of shady.
There he is on 93.7 The Fan on our video feed. .com. Perhaps you're listening on the Odyssey app. Perhaps you're driving around in your car. It's time for Andrew Destin, a.k.a. Destiny's Child. He's on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Child, we have a problem here. It seems that you and Derek Shelton, there may be some tension growing. We're going to play a tape, and we're going to get your interpretation of it. Is that okay?
Sounds good to me. I don't know what this is about, but I can only imagine.
I don't know what this is about. Paul, you ready?
This is...
I mean, we're not stoking the fires here. We're just this reporting the news. So here we go. Let's go back in time 2 weeks ago before I went on vacation. I innocently asked you when you thought Jared Jones would be back, and this was your answer, Destiny's Child.
I will say August 14th.
Okay. I dutifully reported that to Shelty not even an hour later, and Shelty grew a little bit tense, and this is how that went.
You know, Destiny's Child thinks he's Nostradamus, so he's evidently putting a date out there.
I wonder how things have been since, and do we have a growing tiff between a beat writer and a manager?
First, that's genuinely hilarious. I love the Nostradamus comment. I really enjoy that.
You know, Destiny's Child thinks he's Nostradamus, so he's evidently putting a date out there.
I mean, that's just great, right? Like, that's great banter. I love that. I hadn't seen Shelton actually in a while before yesterday. It'd been 2 weeks, I think, just with the team being on the road. All-star break, and then a little personal time after the break. So yeah, I think he was happy to see me, but you guys will have to ask him in an hour. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was putting on a show. I don't know. But
now, does he refer to you these days as Destiny's Child or perhaps DC, or how does that go?
Destiny's Child. He was glad to see me yesterday and said, good to see you, Destiny's Child. press conference.
Tremendous.
I will say August 14th.
Are you sticking to that timeline for Jones?
Something around that. I mean, my thought is mid-August. It's, you know, maybe August 10th, maybe August 14th, 16th, something around then. I mean, he was throwing yesterday. I knew he'd thrown a little bit earlier. Maybe that was the day before or something like that. But he was out to 90 to 120 feet through a flat ground. So there's some progression that needs to happen. Eventually he'll throw off a mound. Maybe that'll require a rehab start or two, something like that. So just given that it's, what, July 22nd, you know, July 23rd, there's still a little bit of time. I imagine it's at least another week, maybe two, before we see him back.
Speaking of another week, Destiny's Child, we are a week away from the trade deadline. And so winners of, what, 7 of 8 or whatever it was, they won 6 in a row, 7 of 8, whatever it is, it's very clear now that they need to go add a piece or two, because all of this stuff about how they're a year away and this isn't the year to do it and all that stuff, all that crap goes out the window, doesn't it?
Yes and no. I think that to the conversations we've had, you know, every week on this show, I still think that next year is the year that the team is going to be a better one. However, I think the calculus has changed tremendously the last few weeks, just given the body of work. That Phillies series, you never want to place too much emphasis on just one three-game set, but what they showed to me against the Phillies is that they really can compete with anybody in baseball, and it's not to be taken lightly. So what I say with all of that is that with the trade deadline, yeah, I think you have to change the way that you approach it. I think that they absolutely need to add. I don't think it's so easy as the conversations that we've had here where I've been, you know, beating the drum of, hey, Aroldis Chapman's on an expiring contract. Maybe he's the guy that you deal to a contender because he's so pricey, all that sort of stuff. Now, I'm not saying that that's not going to happen, but my point there is that this is a team that needs to be taken seriously. You're a couple of games over 500. There are a lot of teams jumbled up there in the NL wildcard picture that I see no reason that the Pirates aren't as good, if not better. I think you have to go out and get an outfield bat. I think you have to. Whether that's a rental, whether that's a long-term guy, you have to add to this team, and it's just a matter of to what degree they decide to.
Are you still of the mind, however, that they shouldn't part ways with any of their top prospects?
Yes, 100%. And Bubba Chandler still, to me, is the one guy that's truly untouchable. And I just say that because I think he's going to be a big component of next year, the way that Jared Jones is a big component of this year. And I'm not saying, okay, you need to just kick the tire down the side of the road and keep it rolling and wait till next year, wait till next year. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that Bubba Chandler is the most big league ready of any of the prospects in the farm system, at least in terms of guys who are truly heralded. Like, I really like Braxton Ashcraft, but I don't think he's as much of an impact arm at the next level as Bubba Chandler has the potential to be as soon as next year. Like, Chandler easily could break camp in spring training, be in that rotation, one that has Jones, Skeens, Keller, etc. So he's the one guy that I wouldn't part with, but everybody else is fair game. I think you have to look at this as what is a good trade. With the way that they approach the MLB draft, maybe some guys like some middle infielders like Leover Peguero and Sungche Chang, maybe those are two guys that are more expendable than they were, say, 3-4 weeks ago because of the way the Pirates approach the draft with getting guys like Connor Griffin as the first-round pick, the way that O'Neill Cruz has developed, especially the last month, what he's shown. I think middle infield isn't as big of a concern, so maybe that's one area you could trade. But starting pitching in general, I mean, that's where the depth in this farm system is. I got no problem with parting ways with a few of those guys, whether that's Thomas Harrington, Hunter Barco, etc.
Okay, because earlier you seemed to indicate you wouldn't touch any of the top prospects, but in order to, let's say, get a Brent Rooker, at least one, and maybe all it takes for the Pirates to outdo the Yankees or the Phillies or the Reds or the Braves for Brent Rooker would be they'd be the one team who could dip into their top five and throw in a Thomas Harrington. So you would do that.
Yeah, I would do one of the guys that I view as redundant, whether that's, you know, Harrington I like a lot, but you have Ashcraft, you have Bubba Chandler. He's probably the third best right-handed pitcher in your farm system. I think it's okay to part with that guy, which is not to say that, you know, I've changed my tune considerably. It's more just, okay, well, this team has proven to be more serious, so I'm more willing to part with that guy versus you can only trade bottom of the farm system guys.
Would you include Henry Davis in that to clinch a deal?
Probably not, just because you're selling so low. I mean, his value is so low relative to his pedigree and what he's demonstrated capable of. Like, I'm not ready to give up on him yet, and I say that because look at the timeline of what the Giants did with Joey Bart, who is doing tremendously here in Pittsburgh. The last thing the Pirates would want to do is replay that exact scenario, where it's a guy who is a former top pick or top two pick, and you give him all these chances, and then you part ways. Like, we have to remember, Henry Davis was only drafted 3 years ago. I have to believe he gets at least another year in the organization, and maybe he doesn't come back up this year. I think he does, but you can't give up on a number one overall pick like that quickly.
I disagree. I think you can, because you do have two catchers, both under control, both who are high pedigree, both who are everything that you wanted to. Where you thought you were getting with Henry Davis. Henry Davis has a lot of value. He's one of the guys you could trade that brings back a lot of value to you that doesn't change this team. If you get rid of him, it doesn't change this team even a little bit. So to me, I don't understand why we're so like worried about, well, he was 1-1. Okay, Bart was 1-2. And Andy Rodriguez was a really highly drafted, you know, and sometimes 1-1 guys, their best value is what they bring you in a trade while they still have value. I mean, have you seen anything? Yeah. Have you seen anything at all that indicates to you that Henry Davis is going to be a really good baseball player?
There have been a couple of moments last year. This year, I would say not very many. But I think you go back to 23, and it's not to, you know, hone in too much on one game, but like homer off Shohei Ohtani a couple of times, the raw power that he demonstrated. I think with me, with Henry Davis, it's just the standpoint of we have to remember how much money was invested in the guy with drafting him that high financially. Like, this is an investment from the Pirates. So that's one part of this. The second part is that this team is going to look very different next year regardless. Like, Andy Rodriguez will be back. Sure, maybe that means he's the guy who's the everyday catcher back there and he parts time with Joey Bart. What's going to happen at first base? Is it going to be Rowdy Tellez and Connor Joe again? Like, I'm not so certain about that. Does Andrew McCutchen come back? I'm not entirely certain about that. Like, there are a lot of things at play there where you look at those positions and say, hey, maybe Henry Davis is your first base slash DH or just a first baseman, or you move him back to the outfield. Like, I think you have to give that at least one more year. And the reason I don't trade him is because I don't think you get a ton for him. We have to think from the perspective of other teams. Like, look what the Giants got for Joey Bart. Right? Like, that was just a minor league guy, and it was after he was designated for assignment. Like, the Pirates are a ways away from doing that, but I don't think the value, I don't think he's the guy that pushes a trade over the top. I just don't think that he's perceived in that way around Major League Baseball. His value is so much higher to the Pirates, given what they've invested in him, than what his value would be to any other team. I think that's the best way that I can try to articulate that thought.
Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm. They always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Andrew Destin from the Post-Gazette. Destiny's Child covers the Pirates. Let me ask you this. You're starting a baseball team, an expansion team, and you can start with any one of these three catchers. You get your pick. You put them in order for me. Henry Davis, Andy Rodriguez, Joey Bart. You're the owner of this baseball team. You're also the GM. It's an unusual dual title for Destiny's Child. How are you ranking those three? Davis, Bart, Rodriguez, now to the future. Who's going to have the best career?
Andy Rodriguez, one. I would go Joey Bart, two, and Henry Davis, three. But it's very close between Bart and Davis because I think it's too small sample size. And I'm biased growing up out west. Like, I've seen the body of work Joey Bart demonstrated across 4 years in the big leagues of the Giants. Like, I still need to see more to be convinced that this is truly for real.
Yeah.
But I think Andy Rodriguez is the clear number one guy there. And it's not just the on-field stuff. Like, he's tremendous in the clubhouse. You know, defensively, he's excellent. With the bat, team morale, like, that's the guy who I look at it and say, this guy's going to have a very good big league career. The only question of any consequence is, what's he going to look like coming back from the elbow surgery? But he very well has already made a lot of progress. So, yeah, that's a long way of saying Andy's my guy. I would say that he's the number one there. And then you go flip-flop between the two, Bart or Davis, of which one. They're both just such wild cards to me, and I think it's we have to be careful about how seriously we take what we've seen Bart from Bart in Pittsburgh when you compare that to what he demonstrated for so many years there in San Francisco.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Well, I mean, I can appreciate what you're saying, but I'm of the belief that we haven't seen anything from Henry Davis that suggests he's going to be a really good player. So, to me, I think because he has such a small body of work and he's only got how many, you know, what is it, 200, 250, 300 at-bats or whatever he has and hasn't played a ton, I think that there's probably more value to him. I think there's probably more value in him than even you're giving credit for. The other guy I think there probably is value to, because he's a young, controllable, left-handed power hitter, is Sawinski. Even though he hasn't hit well, he's hit with power. Left-handed bat like that that hits it out of the park. I'm not saying you're getting a king's ransom for him, but I don't think he's valueless either. So, I mean, I think there are some guys they could actually trade that would look like maybe they're either being sellers or they're trading them off the major league roster, but they're not necessarily changing the makeup of their team if it gives them a chance to make them better. Wouldn't you agree that's kind of what you want to do?
Yeah, I think it's certainly something to consider. I mean, with Sawinski is a good point to bring up because he's had a much more significant body of work at the big league level, right? I mean, it's the guy who hit close to 30 home runs last year, has shown capable of at least playing solid corner outfield. I wouldn't say that he's a guy that you could peg in as an everyday center fielder really on many teams, let alone the Pirates. I mean, that's the reason Michael A. Taylor is here in part, is just given how much better he is defensively. But yeah, it's a good point, Paul. It's that this is not going to be... At least I don't think. I don't think this trade deadline should be perceived as a clear-cut, obvious, all the Pirates are going to do is add, there will be no subtractions, because, right, I mean, that's just obvious math with the 26-man. Like, they're going to have to part ways with a few guys to clear spots for greater impact players at the big league level. I'm really curious to see which ones are the ones that they part ways with, if anyone, right? Like, Sawinski, controllable, young, has demonstrated power. There's a lot of upside there. And if you put him in an environment where you can allow a guy to fail, play him every day against righties and lefties, sure, that could work. But I don't know. It's something I'm very interested to see what happens there, just because there are some clear, obvious holes on the roster. And I'm curious if that means giving up on guys or it means, okay, we're going to try and make all of it work together. I'd have to believe that they're going to have to part at least with some big league talent to make any of these deadline deals happen.
Key Brian Hayes, I must have got five questions, and I'm sure you're getting a lot as well. He's gotten some singles lately. The average, if you take, you know, a little blip of time, the average looks okay, but this is a disaster. The power's gone. He was great in his final 3 months last year, just absolutely raking the ball, and nothing's happening this year. It's been an offensive disaster. The power is completely gone. What's happening with him? Is there any hope that he's going to recapture what he had late last season? And would the Pirates ever consider any alternatives, even for a little bit, with Hayes?
I can't. It's really difficult for me to come to a conclusion about what exactly is plaguing Ke'Bryan Hayes. But I think one point would be he's swinging at a lot of pitches. You look at his stats in July. I mean, I think I have this correct. I don't think he's walked in July. Like he's just kind of all over the place in the sense of, you know, he's making contact, he's fouling off pitches, going deep in at bats, but there's not really any power there. It feels, I guess the best way to put it would be, it feels like a defensive swing versus an offensive swing. Like he's reacting to pitches versus being out in front, trying to drive the baseball. Feels like maybe he's a little bit on his back foot a little, but that's not anything, you know, mechanically diagnosed by me. It's more just the eye test of, this is a guy who's trying to put the ball in play and spray it around versus trying to drive it with authority. So, yeah, maybe his average is a little bit up in July, but to your point, Joe, this has not been an impact offensive season for Ke'Bryan Hayes. the only thing you can hang your hat on is he's shown it before, right? He's demonstrated, whether it was the end of last season, whether it was 2020, it is in there. And I think that's why the Pirates would be so reluctant to move a guy like him. Like, I'm not saying that on the record of, they will never trade Ke'Bryan Hayes, or they are exploring trades. Like, I don't have any intel on that one other than it would be, in my opinion, foolish for the Pirates to move off him, just given that the contract, while, yes, it is one of the higher ones on the team, is still very much a solid contract for a guy who provides you gold glove defense. And anything you get with the bat is a surplus. The issue is right now what you're getting with the bat is not even league average. So that's where we're having the discussions. I don't see any way that the Pirates don't continue to play him there every day. But I wonder if we start to see more 4 days of starting a week, 5 days of starting a week versus 6 or 7, and you see Jared Triolo spill him with more, or spell him with more.
He's worse.
Starts.
Jared Triolo's worse. What about Peguero? Why isn't he here? I think he could help this team. And I know he's not, you know, Brooks Robinson or Mike Schmidt as far as hitting, but I think that he could help this team. I mean, when we say that Triolo could spell Ke'Bryan Hayes, I'd rather have Hayes at the plate.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Right. And I think that's why we're seeing it play out the way it is. And to your point about Peguero, I have no solid answer as to why that's the case. I mean, and he's fared well enough in AAA Indianapolis. He looked solid at times last year. He's had issues with hitting spin. You know, curveballs are really a problem for him, and sliders that he'll swing over the top of them. The plate discipline isn't great. But in terms of the tools, in terms of what he's demonstrated in the minors, yeah, he's earned a chance to be up here. I can't, you know, on good authority say, why isn't he here? All I can say is that given what they have available at the big league level, that's why we're seeing so much of Ke'Bryan Hayes amid those struggles, is because, frankly, I don't think there's many other better options. As for why Peguero isn't here, wish I had a better answer for you, because we haven't seen him this year. He came up for that brief cup of coffee when Michael A. Taylor went on the paternity list, and he didn't even get in a game. So, I can't put any logic behind that answer.
Well, and again, I mean, I think one of the things we saw when they finally brought up Palacios, I mean, I don't know that he's like hitting the cover off the ball by any stretch, but he has given them a little bit. And it feels like in some ways, ever since he's been in the lineup, there's been a little bit of spark. I don't know, maybe sometimes just changing things up a little bit can help.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt when the guy that you're bringing in is a great clubhouse guy. Like, I think if you polled everybody in that clubhouse about Joshua Palacios, they'd say, yeah, this is one of the highest character, energetic guys in the room. And it was a shame for Palacios' sake that he was injured for so much of the season. Him getting up here has been huge. You know, he can play the outfield spots. He's not great defensively at any particular one of them. He's average to solid, but, you know, clutch late in games. You can't really, I mean, that was kind of an interesting conversation with Derek Shelton last night about guys with slow heartbeats with reference to Nick Gonzalez and how he comes up clutch late. I feel like Joshua Palacios kind of has that too, because late in games, you put him in a pinch hit spot. Last year, he was excellent at it. Last night, he did a solid job of doing that, coming off the bench for Connor Joe, who's, you know, really been scuffling the last couple of months. Like, Palacios, that's the kind of guy that you want on any roster, whether that's a fourth outfielder, a fifth outfielder, just a guy off the bench. Like, he needs to be here the rest of the season, at least in my mind.
Andrew Destin, Destiny's Child from the Post-Gazette. Read his stuff at postgazette.com. I guess we can finish with the obvious. It's Paul Skeens Day. Do you just expect more of the same here? I don't think there's any reason not to, right? I mean, I think there's a really, really good chance he's going to go out and dominate the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that I'm curious about, and I'm probably getting too much into the nitty-gritty, is that last time against the Cardinals, he threw a lot of curveballs, which is not his best pitch. That's probably his fourth best pitch, and that really messed with the Cardinals. Like, that was not part of their scouting report, it seemed, at least from when I was out there in St. Louis. There were a lot of bad swings.
Yeah.
So I love the cat-and-mouse game of just seeing how this goes. I'm curious if it's going to be the top three pitches from Skeens. Does he roll more curves again? I'm curious with that. But, you know, the Cardinals had Mitch Keller's number until last night. The Cardinals have only seen Paul Skeens once. So I would say that there's little reason to believe anything other than that he will dominate. But I'm curious to see the cat and mouse game. I really always enjoy that.
Destiny's Child, you're in it.
14.
You're a wonderful man. We'll be reading your stuff in the Post-Gazette. We're certainly going to present this. Is there anything you want us to tell Shelty to try to head this off at the pass.
You know, Destiny's Child thinks he's Nostradamus, so he's evidently putting the date out there.
Anything at all that we can sort of smooth the waters going into tonight's media session?
You do, actually. You can bring up, I was on a bachelor party this past week with a good friend of mine. We were bourbon tasting in Kentucky. I know how Mr. Derek Shelton likes his bourbon. So you bring that up, and maybe they'll put me in some good graces.
Okay.
Paul, you been at a bourbon tasting?
I don't do bourbon.
You don't?
I don't like stuff.
You do everything else?
I don't like dark alcohol, basically. Huh.
What do you make of this, Destiny's Child? He certainly likes light alcohol.
I drink vodka. I like vodka. Obviously, it seems like, Destiny's Child, you like bourbon or whiskey, right? I mean, you know, my son, Elijah's really into bourbon and all kinds of different old fashions and all that other crap. Me, I just don't like it. It's too much for me. I don't like tequila either, believe it or not, Joe.
Wow.
I'm a vodka guy. That's what I do. I'll do a million different ways to drink vodka, but
how about gin?
A little bit, but it's a little bit. I'll drink a little bit of it, but I'm not a huge fan. I don't drink wine.
It feels to me like gin is more of like a hardcore drug.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one night on gin, Destiny's Child, I wound up sleeping under a hedge in Buffalo. Something is more powerful about gin. Would you agree?
Oh, I mean, for me, it's tough. I mean, I like dark stuff. So bourbon, I'll drink a Guinness any day of the week. But gin, it's funny because that's like probably the drink or the liquor of choice in the family to do gin and tonics around the holiday season. And that's always fun because I'm like, that's, you know, I can't say anybody's, you know, sleeping underneath a hedge, though, Joe. I think you're alone on that one.
Yeah, I was that night.
Yeah. The other thing is I don't do wine either or champagne. I'm not,
Wow.
I like vodka and beer.
Now, Child, speaking of the family, have they taken, I imagine this has been very exciting for them, the rise of Destiny's Child here in Pittsburgh. Has it been? They're back in California?
Yeah, back in California. Funny enough, I'm sure they're both listening. At least my mom is right now. They always listen into all the shows here at 8:30 local time back out on the West Coast. But it's been fun. I think it's the travel back home to cover Sharks games or Pirate or Giants or Rays. Those are moments they certainly appreciate. But it's been fun for them to observe from afar. And, you know, I certainly miss being away from them. But to do this certainly justifies it. I hope they think of it the same way.
Is there any chance that we get to meet Mr. and Mrs. Destiny's Child at some point?
At some point. You missed a chance last year. They were out here for Steelers Niners. We all went as a family, but
I think they'd be quite
here.
I think they'd be quite enamored with Paul.
Well, I think when they come out, we need to bring them on and bring them into the studio and say hello to them.
Gin and tonics for everyone, right?
It sounds like a party.
They're from California. Isn't it gin and juice out there?
Thank you, Destiny's Child.
You know, Destiny's Child thinks he's Nostradamus, so he's evidently putting a date out there.
Unreal. Thanks for having me, guys.
What a pleasure. You should listen at noon today because it could be, even amidst the Cardinals series, that might be the lead topic.
Oh, this is going to be off the rails. I can't wait to listen in.
Thanks, man. Great work.
All right. That was good. That
Always
was good
pleasure.
Stuff.
See you, buddy.
That was the first time in like about 3 or 4 weeks that Destiny's Child and I didn't really go have like a tense moment.
It was headed that way, and I think Destiny's Child has learned how to head that off at the pass.
The Henry Davis, I was going to push him more, a little bit more and more on the Henry Davis thing. Again, I don't, and I never will, understand these people who are so concerned with what I call the prospects or the guys that, you know, they think might become players, that they forget that the only thing that matters is that the major league team wins. And whatever it takes for that to happen is the only thing that matters.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.